Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend John Glennon. Covers the Titans for SI.com, covers the Preds for NHL.com as well. Johnny, what's going on?
Too much, guys. How are you?
We are great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. John, my first question for you is, with Mike Vrabel's help, have you been able to discover what Zach Cunningham's skill set is that he's going to bring to the table for the Titans this week?
I believe we have finally cracked the case on that one. It took a while, took a few days, but Mike Vrabel even went to the extent of talking about a new acquisition. An outstanding player, a kid from Vanderbilt yesterday. So I believe we have a skill set of an excellent inside linebacker, a great tackler, and we know that he will be on the practice field on Wednesday. So we've made a lot of positive progress in that regard, Robbie.
And some nice Twitter fighting along the way.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when that happened Friday, I think a lot of times when a coach storms off, and especially when something that seems so, trivial, there's the sort of thing where you're like, okay, so what is going on? We're like, what does that mean? Did he just get some bad news? Did his team have a terrible week of practice and they're going to, they're going to lay an egg against the Jags or whatever? I mean, it turned out that they didn't. I don't know. Maybe they could have laid an egg, but the Jags just wouldn't let them lay an egg. But as it turns out, he's been in a pretty good mood from the end of that game, moving forward. So do you feel like, I don't know, like this game meant anything other than, you handled a terrible team? Do you think it gives this team any sort of momentum here moving forward?
I think it does. To play that well defensively, and again, huge asterisk, Jacksonville is an awful offensive team. But still, to be that dominant, when you're playing without a starting cornerback and Jenkins, you're playing without Tier Tart, Jacksonville, I think, crossed midfield maybe four times, and one of them was a kind of a gimme play at the end of the first half. They never got in the red zone. We talked about the four turnovers and so forth. I think you have to pick up some momentum from that. And, of course, I shouldn't fail to mention also, the running game, all of 8 yards for Jacksonville. So certainly I think you pick up some momentum there. And from an offensive standpoint, I think there were certainly, far more questions, on that side of the ball. On the plus side, Ryan Tannehill, no turnovers. That's definitely a step in the right direction there. But the pass pro still looks shaky. Not much in the way of explosive plays. Part of that, I think, was they didn't need them, because, as you mentioned, Jacksonville was busy laying a bigger egg than the Titans. But certainly I think anytime you can get a shutout performance in today's NFL, even if it's against the Jaguars, you got to take something from that.
John, what about Julio Jones? Number one, making it through the game and apparently healthy moving into this week of practice. But number two, your confidence level, your thoughts on Julio Jones becoming an elite playmaker again for this Titans offense at some point this year. Where would that be right now with you?
Yeah, it's still a ways away. I think in terms of being an elite playmaker, he was held to kind of 32 snaps, which was probably wise. They didn't need him. It was pretty clear that the Titans were going to win, and they didn't need Julio out there all the time. But the impact wasn't huge certainly. And as I mentioned, I think they only threw downfield, basically more than say 10-15 yards, more than six times, I think, is what the final figure was. And Julio has to figure in that as well now. Will he take some steps forward, as that conditioning returns? I think so. But, as nice as it was to get Julio Jones back, what this team really needs, is A.J. Brown. We've talked an awful lot about that chemistry between Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown. We've talked about, what a red zone target that A.J. Brown is, and really there's no go-to in the red zone right now on this team. So that's going to be the big development for me, and it's almost a situation now where, you know, hey, anything Julio can give us this season, you know, that's kind of gravy.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I watched him every snap Sunday, and he did at one point. He looked kind of explosive on the one time they sent him downfield, and, you know, Tannehill was, you know, didn't have time to set up the throw deep, which is a big problem right now. But he just didn't look very fast or explosive to me. But I also wonder, John, is it okay? Well, the hammy, and you don't want to do that too often because that's where you really, threaten to re-injure it. Or is he just diminished? Because the Jaguars, they had a lot of the day. They'd have a single high safety who wasn't necessarily worried about creeping Julio's way, right. And they had him on a corner on an island with him, and they were just fine doing that. I mean, it was an underwhelming day. He got through it, which is good, but I just wonder, like, what is the upside potential for him this year?
Yeah, I wonder the same. And, you know, as I say, I think it was probably wise that they held him to 32 snaps. That they didn't necessarily need him out there making the big explosive plays. I just don't know what we're going to see in terms of taking it to the next level from Julio Jones this year, certainly. That explosiveness, that great separation that he's always been known for, is just missing right now. And again, I'll say that the Titans didn't necessarily need it on Sunday. You know, they didn't have to fire, shot after shot downfield, because they were pretty much in control of that game right away. But, you know, when you're playing against teams that can actually, score score a few touchdowns against you, you're going to need a little bit more from your own offense, and that's when they'll need more from Julio. And maybe Julio, turns it up towards the end of the season or even next season. But I think he's certainly a complimentary wide receiver right now, and that's why I think, really the big development in this passing attack is when A.J. Brown gets back in there.
John Glennon from SI.com on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John, another game where Tannehill is running for his life against the Jags on Sunday, and that does not bode well for some other fronts they'll be facing coming down the stretch. I guess as you look at this offensive line in the pass protection, do you have any confidence that this is going to get better as they go down the stretch here? What do you think of that group as far as pass blocking is concerned?
Yeah, I thought in general that they had been making strides kind of in the right direction, for the most part here in the latter half of the season, but certainly that was not the case against Jacksonville. The four sacks and, also, as you mentioned, there was plenty of pressure on Ryan Tannehill as well. And, honestly, it's surprising, there's a solid amount of talent in that offensive line. Now, I think some guys are certainly struggling. Roger Saffold, you got to give that guy all kinds of credit for going out there week after week. He's certainly far from 100%. So I think it's a bit of a struggle out there for him. And then, when you look at right tackle, I don't think anybody expected David Quisenberry to be the starting right tackle this year. I think he's put in a solid performance overall, but, he's going to get beat from time to time out there. And then Nate Davis, I think, and I've said this before, I think he's kind of taken a little bit of a step back, unfortunately, this year. So it's an issue right now. And we talked about the lack of downfield throws for the Titans. Well, part of the reason for that is, I don't know if there's a lot of confidence in the offensive line's ability to protect long enough to get those receivers open downfield, to have that extra split second the quarterback needs to make those completions. And as I say, you didn't need that much Sunday against Jacksonville, but certainly in upcoming games, you're going to need that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big problem, and it's a huge step back from last year. Was it 37 sacks allowed? They gave up 25 all last year. And I think you're right, John. I think it's limited what they can do. To me, you got individual improvement, you hope, from Davis, because I agree with your assessment of him. And then can Saffold stay healthy? It's been you know, for the most part, I think you're right. Midseason, they got better, but then it's really, I think, limited what they can do. So we're talking about a team with a right now a defense leading the way. Bud Dupree potentially coming back. You know, you've got a couple of what I think are really tough games. Is this defense, you think, add Zach Cunningham and his skill set that you're so interested in? you know, bring back potentially David Long, bring back Bud Dupree potentially. Is this defense as at peak construction good enough to, you know, carry this team into enough wins to, you know, be in a great position going into January?
It's certainly not a question we thought we'd be asking at this point, is it?
That's right.
I thought it was interesting that you take a look at the NFL, you know, team stat rankings from week to week, and I believe this week is probably the first time in a while that the defense is actually ranked higher than the Titans offense. They played well without Jenkins, without Tart, and it's been a while certainly without Bud Dupree too. So I think this defense, you know, is now to the point where it can certainly play well enough to keep the Titans competitive in most any game. And that's kind of the thing about the Titans right now is that it's hard to predict the future because you just don't know the status of so many guys. You know, is A.J. Brown going to come back right away when he's off IR? Is Derrick Henry going to come back at the end of the season and be a Derrick Henry type force? If you get both of those guys back, well, that puts a whole different spin on your offense, and you combine that with a good defense, boy, you're in pretty good shape at this time. But certainly right now, you know, I think they would love to have some more games like they did Sunday. Unfortunately, you can only schedule Jacksonville so many times. But, you know, when they can get an early lead, when they can get good field position for most of the game, when they can control the clock most of the game, that means they don't have to take a whole lot of chances. They don't have to throw the ball downfield too often. Ryan Tannehill's risk for interception goes down as well. And the offense can play it safe. But as I say, you know, when you're playing San Francisco or Pittsburgh or whoever down the stretch, those teams can actually score at all or certainly more than a couple of touchdowns per game. So you're going to need to keep up. And that's why I think, you know, the Titans offense here, whether it's pass protection or getting more separation downfield, you know, they're going to have to become better if the Titans want to make some noise in the playoffs.
John Glennon from SI.com has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Does a great job covering the Titans for SI.com. John, great stuff. As always, appreciate you taking time to join us, and glad you and Vrabel are in a good spot now.
It's the holiday spirit, Robbie. It's a beautiful thing.
That's right. Appreciate you, John. United. Absolutely. John Glennon, our guest here on Robbie and Rexford. We'll come back, react a little bit to what John had to say. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Attention, men. Have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, my friend Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Hey there, that's right. We have a major medical breakthrough for a man struggling with ED, and this is a common issue. If you're out there listening and frustrated, you don't need to turn to the pill or go to the pharmacy and have an awkward conversation. Hillside Medical Clinic uses a technology called wave therapy. It uses gentle pressure waves over about a 10-minute session that open up and regrow blood vessels. Enough so, we have helped so many men get rid of the ED, and thank goodness the need to take the pill.
And Andrew, our listeners can be rest assured that many clinical studies have been done on this technology as well.
It is irrefutable in my opinion. If you go to hillsidemedicalclinic.com, you can read 50 third-party studies that have been done on our technology, even from Cambridge University and major hospitals, saying this is safe, effective, and that it creates a statistical increase in blood flow.
And Andrew, you have a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We do. You can have your ED taken care of before the holidays, guys. Call us right now. You'll qualify for the exam, assessment, and blood flow ultrasound free and a gift. This is worth the trip. It produces immediate results in the bedroom, worth hundreds of dollars. It's free to callers right now.
That's right, guys. You can put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stoneman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. live at the Corner Pub downtown at 151 5th Avenue North prior to the Titans taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parma Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Good to see Joe Rex Road. The John Glennon and Mike Vrabel appear to be good this week. Back in the good graces of each other.
Now, Kaharski, on the other hand... Yeah, that was weird. people get emotional.
They do.
People are still talking about the drive-by handshake, by the way, Vrabel Urban. Very tender moment there.
A couple of tender moments from Vrabel last week. Good stuff. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Caleb texting in. Everyone wants to complain about the line and this player and that player, but who are you going to replace them with? The line is what it is. All they can do is get the ball out quicker and hope that Tannehill doesn't get killed. And speaking of the offensive line, a riveting discussion about the offensive line last night on Twitter between yourself and Jared Stillman.
Well, first of all, to the texture, I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I don't think they do what they want to do if it doesn't get better. And – I think the pathway to that, look, I think David Questenberry has done a good job. He's been what you could have hoped for him at right tackle. Ben Jones hanging in there at center. He's a team leader. I mean, he's been there forever. I think Saffold's injury is a problem. And I just, when you get that kind of break and then you still, the next game, you're dealing with it again, it's just going to be there all year. Lawan, Nate Davis. I think these are two players who are really good, really talented. Nate Davis, can he push forward? And collectively, can they push forward? Can they ever have their five guys who start play an entire game together? I mean, I still think that there's a lot of room for improvement, but I also think there's some just aging and physical wear and tear that's showing itself. Yes, and then Jared, I'm trying to watch the, a nice quiet night at home, watching my night football game. And I just get attacked on Twitter because of, and this is like this. This has gotten out of control with Jared in the offensive line. The problem with Jared is that if he has a take that is dumb and then it gets ratioed like it should, then he kind of does the Skip Bayless thing, like the Skip Bayless with LeBron, where he's just going to find some way to keep like spinning it, to argue the take. When really it's just like, look, man, everybody, the numbers, or anybody who watches the Titans can tell you that last year to this year, pass protection is massively different. But Jared found a line in my story that said a strength in 2019 and 2020 is a weakness, basically. I'm paraphrasing from my Sunday column. And I'm talking about pass protection. And his point was, how could you say 2019 it was a strength? Now, I will say, I will give Jared a concession here. I should have in that column said second half of 2019. I mean, they gave up 29 sacks in the first six games. So it wasn't for the entire 2019 season. But you tell me, Robbie, if you agree, and we've talked about it, but that 2019, it was a disaster at the beginning. No Taylor Lewan. Roger Saffold's in his first year and he's just not good. Jameel Douglas is at right guard. They go to Jacksonville, give up 9 sacks. It was like the beginning of the season, it was disastrous. So to say it was a strength for just 2019, I agree. That was too simplistic. But then it did. It got dramatically better. And it was good down the stretch, and it was outstanding last year. Have I lied on any of that?
I don't think so, although I am looking up at 2019. They did give up 56 sacks that year. That's a lot of sacks.
Well, right. No question. Now, again, 29 of them in six games,
sure,
for six games. 27 of them in the last 12 games, which still isn't good. So this is where, like, if you argue – so in the two playoff wins over New England and Baltimore, one sack apiece in both those games. That's really good in a playoff game. Jared's point, well, they barely pass in those games. Okay. They gave up three sacks against Kansas City, which is a big argument. Okay, well, all they did was pass in the second half of that game. They weren't the greatest pass protection group in the world, but I promise you, with Conklin at right tackle, with Nate Davis coming on, with Lawan healthy, never had a big injury, Saffold figuring it out, that line, pass blocking and run blocking, was really good and a huge part of the Titans making the run they made. Yes, Derrick Henry dominated. You still have to have an offensive line playing well, and they did. And that's – I mean, we went through the numbers yesterday, last year to this year. It's a huge difference.
Well, one thing that I think is inarguable is the beginning of 2020 before Lawan got hurt. I mean, Tannehill had time to sit in the pocket and, like, pump fake, like clap the football on his hand and just go through every read. And he barely has time to get to his second read with the offensive line right now.
Jared doesn't see it that way. Same guys, same line coach, no change. So why don't you yell at Jared? Why do I always have to yell at him?
Because you're the one that keeps getting on Twitter when I tell you not to.
I mean, it was in my mentions. I should have ignored it. I should have ignored it.
You're Joe, right. You can mute him.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Ooh.
He'd be tweeting at you, rage tweeting at you, and you just would have no idea, and you'd be able to have your calm
Joe
Monday
loves
night
it,
football.
Though.
Oh, he loves it. He does. You thrive off this, Joe.
I do love muting people, though. And sometimes, you know what's cool about muting is sometimes someone will get in a conversation with you, and then it's like, this is from an account you muted.
Yeah.
And then I laugh because I'm like, I'm sure whatever they said was so stupid, and I'll never read it. I can't mute Jared, though.
No, right? You can't.
We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, including a big accomplishment for the Titans on Sunday outside of just the win against Jacksonville. We'll get to that and more coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Talking Titans, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. By the way, Rexroad, I just got through your Twitter thread with Stillman and the argument on the offensive line. Nice use of Brad Hopkins. Is he still available? About guys not aging.
Right. Jared's like, same guys, same line coach. Nothing's changed. Like, so people don't get older? They don't get hurt? It's same guys? What's changed? I mean, you know, they're only on pace to give up twice as many sacks this year as last year. The sack percentage, which is not a made-up stat, it's just a percentage of times you get sacked and you drop back, is twice as bad. But hey, same guys, no change. It's just infuriating. Like, don't get me pissed off right now.
Kevin in Nashville texting in, reading Jared's tweets is like hate watching Alabama and Duke. This coming from Kevin in Nashville.
Like, why even bother me on a nice quiet Monday night? We had a great game. We're all watching. It was a great football game. Just gotta, you know, you lose an argument badly, and just a terrible argument gets exposed, and you can't let it go. Just move forward. Move forward in life. Live in the now.
That's right. Tyler from Berry Hill texting in. Speaking of Jared, he was dumping on Julio yesterday, pretty much saying he's washed up and old. While watching the game last night, I was thinking, how does Julio compare to A.J. Green? Green's looked good this year, and I thought he was washed up and old. I think you can make the argument that Julio could be much better than Green if he can maintain staying healthy. This coming from Tyler and Barry Hill.
Look, I mean, I wrote Sunday, basically, like, it didn't look good. I mean, I got to say, I'm probably more in Jared's camp on Julio, and I've changed. See, this is the thing. You can have an opinion, and then you can get new information, and then you can change your opinion, or you could be Skip Bayless and keep saying LeBron sucks. I'm not optimistic about Julio Jones being a dynamic player. We did see it in Seattle, but I don't know. It's the question I asked Glennon, which is, so is this sort of like even the routes they're having him run, is it all part of a let's ease into this idea and we just can't try to cut loose too often because we can't afford another hamstring tweak? Or is he just diminished to that extent? But all I know is that he didn't look very fast or explosive, and the Jaguars were not worried about him, and they did not pay for it. So some of them not paying for it is, again, Tannehill not being protected, but I don't know. I think it was encouraging that he finished a game, but how he looked running around was not encouraging.
No, and it's one of those things where you're hopeful that it was just, hey, he's on a snap count, he's easing back in, and as he gets healthier and the season goes on, he gets that explosion back and he looks better. Because I will say, like, he looked pretty explosive to me against Seattle, and that's the game we keep pointing back to. I don't think he's just totally lost it, but I will say we're talking about one game, basically, where we've seen Julio Jones look fully explosive to this point in the season. That's not good. That's not what you signed up for.
He made that incredible sideline catch in the Buffalo game. He had the one total, like, angry run, beast mode run in the first half against Kansas City. That looked like, you know, Julio Jones. So I don't know. I still, like, if you compare it to last year's offense, could he, if he stays healthy, stays on the field, now you get 22 back, now you get 11 back, can he be something like what Corey Davis was for this team last year? I think potentially, but I also think, again, like, last year's team had better offensive line play than this year's team does. I don't see how that's, I mean, I don't think that's debatable. And that's just a critical part of this coming together. And I don't know where that's going.
Well, I don't either, but it's, if this team is going to do something coming down the stretch here, but especially in the playoffs, like, you got to be able to throw the ball down the field. Like, that was one thing that we talked about this year. And look, it's better with the play action game, obviously, with Henry in there. We recognize that, and hopefully that's going to be the case again for this Titans team at some point. But, like, part of the excitement for this offense this year was you do have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones that can attack the defense down the field. But if you can't block, it's going to be difficult for those guys to get open down the field when your quarterback's laying flat on his back like we saw on Sunday. So that's a big problem. Like, as much as the offensive skill set and the skill positions that we talk about all the time, a lot of this league still boils down to, if you can block, you're going to give yourself a chance, and if you can't, it's going to be difficult to operate. I mean, that's a lot of what this league boils down to.
No, I mean, football's always going to be won and lost up front. If you can block and protect, but also if you can disrupt the way the Titans have made such a huge leap this year. And I also think that, you know, like last night, let's go to that game. Now, Sony Michel, eventually, he actually had a really good night. I mean, he ran the ball really well for the Rams. I didn't anticipate the physicality he ran with. But even before they kind of got him going, you know, the play-action game was really working for the Rams. So, again, are the Cardinals worried about Sony Michel? I don't think so. Did the Rams have to have running success to run a lot of play-action? No. They had success running play action. And I think the Titans should do that more. I mean, I think on a good day or a bad day of running the football, play action can still work for you. And I'd like to see that more. And I think maybe, you know, that also gives you a little bit more time for Tannehill in some instances. So, you know, sometimes you run play action, they blitz into it, and he turns around and, you know, his internal organs are jumbled because he got hit so hard. But I still think they should do it more often.
Or just keep targeting Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. 3 targets, 3 catches the other day. Just that 100%.
Do better than that.
Just keep going, man. Just keep giving
the
ball.
Do better than that. Hey, Westbrook-Ikhine, is a good, you know, third outside receiver if you have everybody there, and certainly a guy who helps this offense because, as Robbie Stanley can attest, blocking at the receiver position is very important.
Very important, very fun to watch, and obviously the key to the Super Bowl this year if they can block well enough at wide receiver. Andrew texting in, our line worries me not because our guys get beat, but because three or four times a game, guys will come through absolutely untouched. I don't understand how that happens when the defense is only sending four or five. This is coming from Andrew on the text line.
Well, I think that was especially true in the last game, right? There were a few times, a couple in particular, where I think it was just a communication mistake by the Titans. Now, but honestly, and Corey Curtis said this yesterday, I mean, those are the ones where you're like, okay, go through it and you can fix that. I mean, I think it's more concerning when guys just get beat, but that did happen to Lawan Saffold-Jones at different times in that game that led to, if not sacks, good hits, quick pressures on Tannehill. I mean, when it crossed the line. Actually, I thought, you know, watching it again, I thought Nate Davis actually looked more like Nate Davis in this game, especially as a run blocker. So I will say that maybe that was a nice step forward for him, and there's some hope there that, you know, it all comes together. Again, 2 years ago, it was probably a little bit earlier than this, but, you know, a big part of that surge was that offensive line as a five-man group coming together. I don't think you can rule it out as a possibility right now.
It was a failure on our part not asking Glennon about the PFF grades earlier this hour. That was a tough one.
Oh, my gosh. How did I not shame him on his PFF grades? I'll just tweet at him. I'll start a Twitter war with him.
That's right. We'll continue the conversation on the Titans. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Our buddy Charles Robinson coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. All that ahead. We know many of our neighbors have been hurting this week following the deadly tornadoes that ravaged both Kentucky and Tennessee early Saturday morning. And all of us at 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media are lending a helping hand to those in need through Blood Assurance, the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, and the Western Kentucky Tornado Relief Fund. Head on over to thegamenational.com/help to see how you can help today. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You were with the O-line a lot yesterday. I don't always watch you.
Yeah, you do. That's a lie. When the fact that you had to preface that and say I don't always watch you means you watch me.
Are you with them that often or yesterday?
Yeah, I'm the head coach of the team, Paul. I try to go.
Maybe you're with the cornerbacks sometimes because they're having issues. So was yesterday a day where you felt compelled to talk to them extra, or was that standard thing?
I talked to every group the entire game.
I talked to the offensive line.
What's the next? Who is the next question? John, you want to cover the Cunningham stuff?
That was a nice exchange yesterday between Vrabel and our friend Paul Kaharski at Titans Media Day. What'd you think of that exchange? Vrabel spending some time with the offensive line, says he spent some time with everybody, and then very much anticipated and wanted a John Glennon, Zach Cunningham question.
Yeah, I mean, Kaharski actually drove him to asking for the Cunningham question.
Please ask me.
Also, I guess Vrabel thinks Kaharski is so obsessed with him that he watches him like every moment pregame. So.
That was an
I'd be a little.
I loved that comment back. He's like, oh, you watch me, Paul? I know you watch me.
Does he think that's all we're all doing in the press box?
Just watching him the whole time.
All of the binos, just, you know, watch Vrabel. What's Vrabel doing?
I probably am going to pay extra attention to his post-game handshake from now on after that saucy one between him and Meyer and Urban Meyer. It's good stuff.
Yeah, that was I feel like most of them are pretty fast.
Yeah.
Most of them are pretty fast. Like even like Belichick, you know, there's – because how many times is he, I guess three times, right? Three times that he's seen Belichick. They're usually pretty fast, but not quite that fast.
Ryan in Nashville on the text line. So if the Titans win on Sunday, who do you pull for, the Colts or the Pats? Keep in mind, Colts-Patriots taking place on Saturday, so you'll know the result of that game before the Titans play.
Right, so that's the thing. You have to decide going into the game, who are you rooting for? So to me, it's how you feel about your team. I mean, on Sunday, the Titans are going to be going for, if the Colts lose to the Patriots, then the Titans are going for the division. They have a chance to clinch the division. No, they have a home game in the playoffs. But also, they're in a worse spot for getting the one, because that's a big hurdle for New England. And New England, of course, has a tiebreaker. Or you are playing to become the number one seed again in the AFC because the Colts beat the Patriots. And now you have a chance to reclaim that spot and be in pole position for the last four games of for the last three games of the season if you beat Pittsburgh. So how do you feel about your team?
I don't think this is particularly close. You're rooting for the Patriots, or you're rooting for the Colts, excuse me. I mean, as long as the one seed is still on the table, you need to be going for the one seed. So I don't think this is much of a conversation. I'm rooting for the Colts if I'm a Titans fan on Saturday night.
Okay, well, if I'm right and the Titans' overall collective performance Sunday is good enough to lose to this Pittsburgh team, which still has life and, you know, has plenty of issues too, but still has life and is at home and is Pittsburgh and plays tough defense, and then good enough to lose to a San Francisco team that I think is someone no one in the NFC wants to see in the postseason. No one. Well, then, by rooting for the Colts, you could all of a sudden be in a position going to the last two games of the season where, like, you have to win both to win the division. Now, you probably still will. You know, it's the Dolphins. We'll see where they are. And then it's, of course, the Texans, who are not going to sweep the Titans this year. Let me call that shot right now. But still, that's not a very comfortable position, Robbie, to be all of a sudden in a fight to win the division. You know, you could be done with it. And the Patriots could still, like, they could still lose to the Bills in the rematch next week.
They could. I just think as long as the one seed is on the table, you got to root for a chance to put yourself in that spot. I mean, keep in mind, and you can't really think about this, but the Colts still do have the Cardinals coming up on, you know, Christmas Day. So, on the road, by the way. So, that's going to be a very tough game for them. So, it's not like the Colts are easy coming down the stretch. Now, I will say, I feel a little bit different about the Raiders game against the Colts than I did before this weekend, given the egg that they just laid against Kansas City.
Although they're just, you know, they look dead, and then they go in and beat Dallas on Thanksgiving. So it's still like, be careful anticipating anything. But yeah, I would have to agree. At some point, you figure they probably just move on from this horrific year.
So a big accomplishment for the Titans franchise on Sunday, outside of just the win against Jacksonville, that secures six winning seasons in a row, the first time that that's been done in the history of the franchise. And John Robinson has been at the helm for all of that run for the Titans. And look, we talked about a little bit earlier in the show, you look at the recent success for the Titans. At some point, you've built expectations up to the point where you need to see that come through with some postseason success. I think that's where this Titans team is. I think that's a very good spot to be as a franchise. But I do think six winning seasons in a row, based on where this team was when John Robinson took over, I do think that is worthy to point out, and I think that's worthy for a conversation, because overall, even with the draft missteps that we've talked about a lot here on the show, even with some free agent signings that have been an absolute bust, by the way, huge sack for a Jadeveon Clowney the other day against the Ravens as well. Even with all those things happening, John Robinson still largely has done a pretty good job as Titans general manager.
He's done a really good job. And, you know, if you compare the Titans, during his tenure to other teams, you're talking about a very, very short list of teams that have had the same amount of success. And I'm combining regular season and postseason, it's a very short list. So that's impressive, but I think it's more impressive when you consider, again, he came in to a terrible situation. I mean, it's harder to go from like good to great in the NFL than it is to go from terrible to pretty good.
Good to great.
That's right. The official 2019 slogan. It's easier to go from 4-12 to 9-7 than it is to go from 9-7 to 12-4, right? But you're talking about 5-27, and immediately this move, and you create a competitive team right away. Some pieces in place, Mariota, Lawan, Jarrell Casey, Delanie Walker, but a lot of pieces added right in that first offseason that took them, boom, to a team that was playing for the division at the end of the year. A huge win at Kansas City. The days of Ryan Suckup as kicker. But then to have the consistency, no one's ever done this. 6 in a row in the salary cap era, that's significant. You know, it really is. And, you know, look, recent drafts suggest that there could be a downturn here because you have to hit in those drafts. But ultimately, you are judged by one thing as a GM. You're not judged by your draft classes, your free agent classes, or what. You're judged by the wins and the losses, and it's been awfully good.
It's been awfully good, and one of those things where it's just amazing to watch kind of what the Titans have built. I mean, you brought it up, and we talked about this last year heading into the playoffs. When you combine regular season wins and playoff wins over the last 5 years or whatever the stretch is, there's only a handful of teams that are ahead of the Titans in that regard. And yes, when you talk about Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and now you've brought in Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, the conversation's different this year. I mean, it was different heading into this year about, all right, it's time for this team to break through and capitalize in the postseason on this window. And we'll see if they can get healthy and if they can do that as they come down the stretch here. That, to me, is a separate conversation than the one we're having right now. But, again, I think that's a really good spot to be in as a franchise, to have those expectations placed upon you.
Yeah, and by the way, it is three teams in the league that have better regular season records and more playoff wins. You know, in Robinson Sound, Patriots, Chiefs, I guess it would be the Packers. Is it the Packers?
Yeah.
I think it's the Packers. Patriots, Chiefs, Packers. I mean, that, and then after that, it's Titans in terms of regular season and postseason wins, fourth in the league since then. You know, you want the big payoff. You want the big run. You had one run to the AFC title game, but you want the big payoff. It could still happen this year. In the meantime, they're on the verge of clinching the AFC South for the second straight year, and that hadn't been done since 2008.
ESPN 102.5 The Game and Music City Man Cave want to treat one lucky listener to a Monistay treatment package. Text CAVE now to 615-737-1025. That's CAVE to 615-737-1025 and be entered for a chance to win the Music City Man Cave Christmas giveaway. Make sure you hit up our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, getting his thoughts on all things NFL. That's up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.